government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I am your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this October the 9th on the West Coast, and now October the 10th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. It's so nice to have you with us this evening, and we'd also like to welcome all those in the U.S. military who are listening either on blogtalkradio.com and or on the Wind Talkers radio network. We're so pleased that you have determined that you're going to carry this show on a regular basis, and I'm happy to hear all the wonderful things from folks that are waking up to the truth around the planet, and want to extend a special greeting to all the military to thank you for all the hard work and the risks that you take on a day-to-day basis. Of course, we appreciate your families for allowing you to do that as well. What are we going to talk about tonight? Well, I woke up this morning to the news that the long-legged Mac Daddy, the usurper-in-chief in Washington, D.C., won himself a prize. The Nobel Pizza Prize. I can't seriously call it the Peace Prize because I don't see where there's any peace other than possibly a piece of pizza. So I want to congratulate him on that ruse. I've heard he's won himself something like a $1.3 or $1.4 million cash prize. What's a couple hundred thousand dollars when they're stealing trillions on a daily basis? In fact, just the night before, I received the news that Obama had been a part, along with Bush 41, Clinton 42, and Bush 43. At midday, the tally was $27 trillion, and some hours later, toward the evening, it had been reevaluated to be in the neighborhood of $38 trillion. International scandal, and the reward is the Nobel Pizza Prize. My goodness, what will they think of next? Well, rather than spout out all of my displeasure with what's going on in politics and the corruption in the mainstream media, the corruption in the central banks, the pharmaceutical companies, and Hardin, Montana with their empty jail, I would like to bring on tonight's show a man of great esteem. He is a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, and he is our resident science advisor here on Evident Footprints, now every Friday night, has been since this show began a couple of years ago. And his name is Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show. How are you doing this evening?
Pretty good, Don. How are you tonight?
I'm great. You know, after the story about the Nobel Pizza Prize, it makes me want to have a beer or two, you know? Friday night, pizza. What do you think of this story? Of course, I'm being a bit sarcastic and ridiculous, but it seems like they outdo themselves almost on a daily basis. They come up with a new one every moment.
Well, first of all, I really had a problem with it because even though I didn't read all the details, I was afraid to get too nauseous. I certainly wondered exactly what the prize was really for. As you said in your opening comments, I don't see any peace anywhere. But I guess that doesn't matter. The thought that crossed my mind was, you know, Washington is so broke right now that this might be a way that somebody had of throwing a few bucks towards the president to keep his lifestyle afloat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's the secret behind the whole thing.
Yeah, there was the gratuitous congratulations from the European Union as well. And money launderer in chief from the the Deutsche Bundesrepublik, Angela Merkel, had special congratulations to give Barack Obama too. And I recall several months back reading about the money laundering that was going on, the arrest by the World Court and the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements, about the money laundering and the obfuscation that was going on. Isn't it amazing how quickly they forget?
Yeah, well, justice in the modern world, you know, it's a little bit different than it used to be.
Yes. Now, let's shift gears here, because I don't want to bring the audience down more than the media has already brought us down, and more than these glowing reports about the achievements of our political leaders. Of course, I'm being a bit tongue-in-cheek. You and I have been on this role about consciousness. When I say role, I'm spelling it with a double L. And a lot of people have written in or even called in to thank us for the message. They have recognized that we're putting the truth out, something that a lot of people aren't willing to do. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people talking about consciousness. It's talked about a lot. But it's not done in the context of really assessing the world's problems in terms of assessing our leadership and really understanding what's going on in our government. And I got to share with you, recently, just today, I was in some high-level meetings with a group of people, and we talked about the issue of integrity. Now, I'm bringing this out, and certainly you can, you're free to comment on this. I encourage your comments on this. But I have to tell you, much like when I went through the experience of my father's passing back, it was spread out over a 7-week period from when he was stricken with a massive stroke, his partial recovery, and then his subsequent passing on April 1st of this year. That 7-week period of operating totally from a spiritual perspective, and really looking at eternity, knowing that my father was going to pass, took me to another level in my consciousness, and I've not been able to come back to where I was before. I can look back upon that and understand it. And I had a conversation with another group of people, not a huge group of people. We're talking basically 4 other people. So there were 5 of us having these conversations, and occasionally we would bring another person into our talk via conferencing. And I have to tell you that there was this issue of integrity that we talked about, and that we have to take responsibility for things that have happened and things that will be happening. And we approached it in an eternal perspective. In other words, we're not talking past, present, and future, but just everything as a steady stream. And we moved through some very thick energy, but came to some astounding agreement on a number of issues. And I'm really looking forward to sharing with you and our audience at a later date some of the things that are going to manifest out of this. But we proved to ourselves that many of the, you know, the teachings of Jesus Christ, the teachings of Buddha, even Jiddu Krishnamurti, are applicable at any time in history, and we can right the wrongs that have been done, and we can avoid mistakes, and we can take responsibility, and we can co-create at the drop of a dime. Just all kinds of I don't want to say negative energy, but let's say, you know, when you're working on a project and you hit that brick wall and you have to step back and you assess, and you've shared that many times with the listening audience, how creativity has a sort of a mysterious way of creeping up on you, and you discover the answer that you've been searching for months or years. It just comes to you in the most unexpected way. We had that happen over and over and over again today. And I felt that that is a worthwhile aspect to discuss in terms of consciousness, in terms of one taking one's responsibility, because this resulted in immediate cooperation amongst the group of people. Just it only has to go upward now. That's the only direction it can move, and it's already doing that. So I wanted to comment on that and let you jump off where you prefer.
Well, you know, you made some very interesting comments, even though they were kind of in a blur. But one of the things you said, which is really very important, and that is that, you know, when you attain that new plateau of consciousness, you could look back to where you were before, but you couldn't go back. And that's a very important thing to understand, because consciousness is intricately entwined with things like knowledge and information. They all go together. You know, if you spent your entire life staring at a Rubik's Cube and playing with a Rubik's Cube, you might be an expert when it came to Rubik's Cubes, but you wouldn't know a darn thing about the rest of the world. And so your consciousness would be focused only on what you knew. So knowledge and consciousness expand together. And the thing about knowledge that's interesting is, once you attain it, you can't unattain it. I mean, as long as your brain is functioning normally and your mind is okay, there's no way that you can unload the information. It sticks with you. And
that's
so
powerful. Yeah.
And so what happens, of course, is that the more you know about things in general, your consciousness has a tendency to creep out in all directions following what you know. And for the people that we have given numerous examples to, you know, over the past few months about different ways to affect your consciousness, my thoughts on that lately have been that maybe we started at the wrong end. And what I mean by that is that, you know, some of the more esoteric solutions and suggestions that we give may not have meaning to a lot of people, because they're not at the level yet where they can appreciate some of that information. So one of the things that I was really interested in doing, and I don't know if you want to do that tonight or some other night, but one of the things that would be kind of interesting, I thought, would be to give an overview of all of the worthwhile things that could be looked at, could be investigated, could be thought about by capable human beings on this planet, and should be investigated and aren't being investigated, simply because there's this preponderating notion that, oh, if all of those things were true, or if any of those things were real, they'd either be on television or they'd be in the newspapers. You hear that so many times, it's quite sickening. There again, part of the consciousness issue raises its head, because the media, which includes TV, radio, and newspapers and periodicals of all sorts, is controlled by a single source, and the only things that are going to appear in there are things which keep you locked into the illusion.
Yeah.
So actually, that's the wrong approach and the wrong mentality to have. But there are so many different things that interest, that could interest us, and that are worth looking into. And a lot of them are things that people don't even know about. So one of the things I thought would be interesting would be just to give an overview of some of the things that interest me. And, of course, there are so many thousands of things that interest me, and I've tried to pursue all of them during the course of my life, at least to some extent. And I realized ahead of time that, you know, some of these topics may not induce any passion in anybody else, but it's beside the point. The real issue is that there is so much more to reality than watching a football game and drinking beer and eating pretzels that it's almost astounding. And those are the kinds of things that you need to be looking at, because the more you spread your efforts into expanding what you know about reality, the more your consciousness will expand. And it doesn't even matter if all of this stuff is literally true or not. Just knowing about it, just thinking about it, just making cross-references between various bits of information in totally different areas of investigation causes a kind of a cross-pollination in your mind, which causes this expansion that we're talking about. So getting back to the original example, you know, if you spend all of your time focusing on a Rubik's Cube or all of your time focusing on a television screen in your home or your den, that's all you're going to have. So if that's what you do, you can't really complain about having a minuscule consciousness. It takes work to expand your consciousness, just like it takes work to blow up a balloon or to build a building or to do anything else that results in an elevation of your efforts and your position in the world. Doesn't matter what it is. And the same holds true for consciousness. Don't you think so, Don?
Yeah. In fact, your first comment where you said you can become conscious of something to the point to where you know it, and you cannot unknow it. And that strikes a resonant chord with me, because we often talk about this thing of belief. And certainly you are free to believe or to disbelieve. And so you can undo belief, but when you really replace it with knowledge. It's a far stronger position for the student of consciousness to hold, to have achieved that pinnacle of belief. Knowledge, and to give up belief, which is really following someone else's dictates. It's a very empowering thing, and I think what you just said is really, in essence, the key to what this conversation amongst this group that I referred to a little while ago was about. Everyone moved together from a position of responsibility and facing the issues with which they agreed and the issues with which they disagreed, and came to a mutual understanding that this thing was far bigger than any one individual. That's what groups tend to do. Group people who are aligned in a purpose and are able to identify that purpose and agree that that purpose is the path that they're going to follow. So, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I wanted to share that with you because it does work. I will say there's the issue of integrity, whether you want to call that honesty or whether you want to call that appreciation for each individual's right to contribute, their right to have a free will. You know, there are a lot of issues. Integrity, we tend to think, is just being honest, okay? But it transcends other qualities that are available to everyone. So not to be verbose, I want to allow you to continue.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. As a matter of fact, you know, when you were very young, you might interpret integrity in just the shallowest of forms, because your training from your parents, hopefully, is, you know, this is right, this is wrong type of thing. And so naturally, the first way you're going to interpret it is that way. But
yeah,
once you get along in years and you start to see the way the world really works, and you start to understand the value of truth and the value of real knowledge and how it can be put to use to better the entire situation, you automatically begin to look at integrity as a much different thing. It isn't just about, oh, I can't tell a lie, or, oh, this is the right way and that's the wrong way. It's much more than that. It's a total evaluation of whatever the issue is and how it fits into the larger picture for the overall good, and why you happen to be at that moment a pivotal point in making that decision. So any time that you adhere to integrity with a higher understanding of what it means, you know, to the whole world as well as to yourself, it actually, it's like picking yourself up by the bootstraps. You actually, I guess you could say you rise a notch or two, and that has another connection to the overall effort of increasing your consciousness, because consciousness isn't just about being aware of what's around you. It's also being internally aware of the greater structure of things and your part in all of that. And once you really start to see that, that's where the creative facets begin to open, and you realize that you have godlike qualities, and that you can create, and that you should create, and that that's part of the reason why we are all here, is to be co-creators with the divine.
What you just described is so accurate. I would say you were that proverbial fly on the wall, Jim, because everyone left the meeting with a great sense of relief and a smile on their face, and the attitude of anticipation of putting all of this into motion, so to speak, and with emotion, if you get my meaning. So I mean, it's true, you hit the nail right on the head. In fact, much of what you said was brought up by various members of the group. Now this may sound like a lot of gibberish to the listening audience, because I'm not at liberty to disclose exactly what we talked about, yet I'm speaking in general terms about the principles and the forces that became dominant and or presented themselves in a very metaphysical way, but just us adhering to what we know to be the right way to deal with each other, the right way to communicate, and the right way to assess and evaluate problems and determine what solutions would be. Nothing is in stone. In other words, nothing is so structured that it cannot remain creative. But there was the realization, and you hit that right on the head, that we looked at the macrocosmic impact that the process was going to have on not just the world, but really the universe. It's become a universal issue. I'm excited about this, and I can't wait to share this, you know, with you in more detail, and eventually the listening audience. Listening audience is going to know about all this. So, around the world, it's some pretty fantastic stuff. So please be my guest. And I'm going to just listen with the rest of the audience.
Well, before I get into some of the things that I wanted to relate in the hopes that it would affect this overall process and some of the listeners, there's one other issue that I'd like to touch on, and that's something also that you brought up, which I've known for quite some time. And that's this process, let's call it that, of replacing faith with knowledge. And
yes.
This is a very, very important thing, because until that happens in every field of endeavor, you really are operating only in a partial vacuum. You're not really at the command post of your life. And that's a very important thing to understand. Now, the best example I can give, and this is not done with any malice intent toward any particular organized religion, so don't take it the wrong way, but there's a very big difference between reading, studying, and absorbing a particular religious dogma and then accepting it all on faith. That's one choice. And the other is to have the relationship with the Creator in such a fashion that you actually can put principles of a spiritual nature to work on a first-hand basis. And one pales with respect to the other, because once you have a real knowledge of the laws that govern the spiritual world, and here I'm talking about higher spiritual things, not just ghosts or something ludicrous of that sort. I'm talking about higher spiritual principles. There's just no comparison between the two. And the thing that's amazing is that in the most ancient part of our world's history, those were the kinds of religious beliefs that actually were widespread. This is the kind of thing that was actually practiced. And that's the reason why in the most ancient times you have some of the most incredible human developments, not only in terms of beliefs and knowledge, but even in the technological sense and in the design and construction of cities and works of art and ships and all manner of things, that when they are looked at now from our perspective, we hang our mouth open in disbelief, because the basic trend is to assume that man's journey through history is a linear one, and so how is it possible that greater things could have existed in the past than do now? But this is the reason why that's possible, is because when you elevate your consciousness to the point where you plug into this information directly, then a stream that you can't even control begins to enter your everyday consciousness, and it floods you with all manner of information. Usually it relates to things that you're interested in or things that you've requested, but a lot of times you get information on so many different subjects that it's mind-boggling, and you can almost pick and choose which things you would like to dedicate your energies towards. And just imagine the kind of planet you'd have if every soul on this earth was engaged in that process. Now, you have to understand that the lords of darkness, let's call them that the lords of darkness understand these rules. They know exactly how all this stuff works. And that's the reason why the illusion is so structured as to prevent you from reaching that level. Because as soon as that happens on a wide-scale basis, the type of world that they have labored to construct must dissolve. It has no choice.
It's built in with inherent failure.
Yeah, and the only thing protecting it, really, is the illusion.
Yes. Exactly.
So anyway, I just wanted to mention that because it's a pivotal point in all of this, and it's very crucial to not only to understand it, but to aspire towards it. And
mm-hmm.
So that brings us to what I wanted to do this evening. Now, this may seem like a departure from some of the stuff we've been talking about, but bear in mind that the general idea here is to awaken areas of your mind with information that you might not even know about or care about. And just the shock of understanding that these things are out there, if you would take the time, even just go to your computer and Google on some of these subjects and read about it, you'd be surprised how it would change your life. You know, you have to do it with the, at least with the feeling that regardless of how astounding some of these things may be, that it's a possibility that they exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can't go there and just say, oh, well, this is all rubbish, there's no point in me doing it, because if you do that, that just brings you right back around in a big circle to where you started, and you're just locked in where you were with no benefit.
Yes. Well, be my guest, Jim. I'll be quiet and feel free to ask me a question if you feel it's appropriate, or invite a comment or whatever. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't want to pontificate on any of these things necessarily. Although the ones I've written down here, I find to be pretty interesting. But I think just talking about them in a very slight way, or you know, me mentioning it and you commenting on it or something of that sort, might prove to be a mind-expanding effort.
Sure.
So,
okay.
We start off here with two subjects which we have addressed pretty profusely on this show over the last 2.5 years, and that's pyramids and UFOs.
My favorite topics.
Exactly. And so we know, and as a matter of fact, there are so many books on the subject, I'm not even going to labor the point, but we already know that many of the pyramids, especially the earliest ones and the Great Pyramid of Cheops, were built with a technology and an accuracy that defies the imagination. And it's very easy for modern Egyptologists to say it was just a tomb and it was built, you know, by slave labor, and so therefore anything is achievable. But if you look into this subject with an open mind, you'll find that it is so incredibly complex, and so it involves so many avenues of investigation just to come to a rudimentary understanding of what's going on, that it'll blow your mind. Because it isn't just about archaeology or Egyptology. It's about chemistry. It's about physics. It's about construction techniques. It's about artificial stone. It's about resonance. It's about geometry. It's about higher mathematics, et cetera, et cetera. It's an amazing subject. And for anybody to take the time to really start to look into it, it will be a mind-expanding experience, I guarantee you. Wouldn't you agree, Don?
Yes. And in fact, you might, you know, my affinity towards musical things or things of sound, but frequency is also something that's there. In fact, there are multiple frequencies going, doing their thing at the same time in a pyramid structure.
Well, sure, that's where that term of resonance enters into.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's just one small subject. And then we had mentioned also the whole issue of UFOs. I mean, there are a lot of people in the modern world who have seen them now by themselves and don't need to be coerced into believing them in them, but they may not necessarily believe that they come from other worlds, and some of them probably don't, because I know our government is messing with that. The Russians have been working on those things for many years. The Nazis were working on that type of craft, you know, during the war and before the war. So the fact of the matter is some of the vehicles that we see flying around are probably from Earth. But if you embrace common sense and realize that in our galaxy alone, there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of potential planets that could harbor life, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense that the only planet with intelligent beings on it would be Earth, because the every law that we know about science and physics and chemistry and light and every other subject suggests that the same rules have been used over and over again throughout the solar system, throughout the universe, throughout the galaxy. And so if the laws of physics are universal and the laws of chemistry are universal, why wouldn't the laws of life be universal? I think it's absurd to assume that we're the only beings, conscious, intelligent beings that exist. And therefore, if we apply to that conclusion the fact that there's probably a bell curve of evolutionary distribution that can be applied to that conclusion, then it stands to reason that there are worlds more advanced than ours and there are worlds less advanced than ours. And the ones that are more advanced may choose to come here. And who's to stop them? That's part of the issue. And we know from many talks on many previous shows that this stuff is going on. And our government certainly knows, and as a matter of fact, there's very, very good evidence to the effect that our government has actually made deals with some of the less advanced individuals that come here from other places. So
yeah.
That's a subject which all of us should take an interest in, because our own destinies are going to be affected by this.
You know, if I can make a comment, Jim, there's a current event that occurred early in the morning hours where they crashed a device into the moon intentionally.
Oh, yeah. I know about that, yes.
And it might be worth discussing, but I did want to comment that in this argument as to whether or not there is life on other planets, I find it almost ridiculous that we would be considered the benchmark for intelligent life in the universe, if you know my meaning. God has fallen far short in his ability to create if we are the masters in that regard.
Well, you know, I think that that type of an attitude is a manifestation of our own lack of accomplishment in the greater scheme of things, because it's a protective attitude that's usually taken on by anybody who feels inadequate, you know. So you hide your inadequacies by developing a superiority complex. And I think a lot of people on this planet, probably the majority of the civilized world anyway, is infected with that attitude. But I got news for you. One of these days, that's going to be cut off at the knees.
Well, that day couldn't come soon enough.
I agree.
Well,
did you want to touch on that moon experiment? Because to be real honest with you, I don't know too much about the details of it, but from what I hear, you know, it was an attempt to basically detect the presence of water in various forms on the moon's surface. And,
I think they used the term ice first off. Now, that's presuming then that the so-called intolerable heat conditions that the astronauts experienced when they landed on the moon suddenly have become frozen. You know, it's another Hegelian dialectical story about what's going on. I suspect that there's something totally different at the root of this whole story, and it probably has to do with a presence there on the planet, and has nothing to do with the intention, because they know if there is water or not on the moon. After all, they landed there in 1969, didn't they? You're talking 40 years, and having been all over space, taking the Hubble telescope. You mean they have to crash a device on the moon to determine if there's ice, isn't that going to debilitate and make that device a non-functional? How is it going to communicate that? Where did that brilliant idea come from?
Well, actually, what I understood was that both devices were actually destroyed in the process. The difference was that the first one went down, creating the explosion, and then as the explosive debris went spaceward, the second following vehicle, in the short amount of time that it had before it crashed, supposedly analyzed the content of that plume and then transmitted the signals as long as it could to Earth, you know. Well, that's a very expensive experiment just to find out if there's water. So I kind of agree with you that maybe something else is going on there.
Mm-hmm.
I could certainly throw out an interesting hypothesis regarding that, and that would be that maybe they got wind of the fact that there was a mining colony there or some other activity, you know, being spearheaded by extraterrestrials, and maybe the first object that was designed to blow up was to either terrify the occupants or destroy something or create a general commotion or perhaps produce a huge quantity of light. I don't know exactly what it might have been for. And then the second device, which was following behind it, if it had high-resolution cameras in it, like the type that the military uses for spy satellites, they would then be able to film the entire process and whatever the result would be and transmit that information back. You know, you can use your imagination and figure out that there are many other potential scenarios that make more sense than just trying to find out if there's any water on the moon.
If I trusted my intuition, which I do, I would say you hit the nail right on the head with both explanations, actually. And whether or not there was ice would just be a side benefit
secondary interest, so to speak.
Yeah. So we're really looking at another attempt to hoodwink the public into believing that it makes sense. Whenever you want to discover ice, build a satellite, build another one to film the crash of the first one into the area, and I suppose put a snowplow on it while you're at it, while you're crashing the first one, and see if you can plow up a little bit of ice, you know? Next, send a robot out to pick it up. I mean, this is insane. It's insane. I prefer to go back to the story about the Nobel Pizza Prize. But go ahead, Jim.
Well, I agree with you that my suspicions are aroused anytime that the government goes out of their way to produce some kind of an announcement having to do with their efforts in space, simply because of the fact that you already know they lie about everything. So if you want to get any insights into what's really going on, you have to look beyond the cover story and say to yourself, what the heck else could be the true nature of the effort that they're extending?
Yes.
That's what I do anyway.
Yeah, and it really makes sense. You know, this type of experiment goes very well hand in hand with how they're operating Wall Street and these bailouts and everything. You know, just let's take millions or billions of dollars and just crash it into planets and moons you know, don't we have a rising oceans? Are we out of water now? Why is it so important to know if there's water on the moon? After 40 years,
well, that,
all this technology.
I can answer that question, at least in terms of the cover story. You know, what they're claiming, of course, is that if we put a colony on the moon and there's water there, not only will you be able to have water to drink and water to raise crops hydroponically and all of that stuff. But you'll also have the basic ingredient, water plus sunlight, by way of electrolysis will produce hydrogen and oxygen, which will be the basis of making fuels, and then the moon can be a stepping off point to Mars. And since the gravity of the moon is only 1/6 that of Earth, you know, you'd have a lot less thrust necessary to send a vehicle from the moon to Mars, for instance, than you would if you went from Earth to Mars.
Yes, so, now you've just given us a plausible explanation as to why they might have done this. Wouldn't it have been simpler just to send the members of the colony up there now to walk over to the South Pole to look for the ice?
Well, yeah, but we've already determined that most likely isn't the true story.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of information coming out about what's going on up there. I'm just alluding to the fact that they're not telling us everything that we know in the alternative media. They're still playing the shell game, you know, with the mainstream media. And that they were so quick to get this story out, and they still haven't brought up Hardin, Montana, beside me. But go ahead.
Well, as long as we're on that subject, I might as well finish up by mentioning the fact that a lot of activity has been seen and studied on the moon for the last, at least 75 years, possibly
mm-hmm.
longer than that.
Because
when some of the big telescopes were first put into operation on this planet, and the moon, being our nearest neighbor, was a very attractive thing to study. And all kinds of things were seen up there. Objects moving across the face of the moon, flashing lights, explosions, things that looked like cities. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. So, you know, we're not told hardly anything. In reality. And if you want to get the whole of this information, you got to dig for it. And that brings us right back to where we were going.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Another issue which I find really, really interesting is the thing called the Baalbek platforms. Now, these are huge, huge platforms which are over in the Mideast and other parts of the world. And the very stones that they are made out of weigh in excess of 200 tons apiece. And these things are so big, so perfectly built, and so stationary that a lot of times other cultures built entire portions of cities on top of them, even though they had been there for thousands of years before they were utilized for that secondary purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is something that you can see. I mean, even if I'm not mistaken, I think there's some of these megalithic platforms even underneath the Parthenon, or some of the other relatively recent structures have even been built on top of these huge platforms. Nobody knows who put them there, how old they are, and the interesting thing about it is moving 200-ton rocks around, I don't care how many slaves you have, it's just not a practical issue. Because you can't get enough manpower around a structure that's that heavy and that dense to affect any form of intelligent movement unless you are making use of some very extraordinary technologies. And to find an entire region that's basically floored with this type of construction, and put together with an accuracy that defies the imagination, is not the product of numerous slaves with copper chisels. It just doesn't work, and so that's something that's worth pondering upon, and it's an interesting issue because it's been sitting there for thousands of years, and people have been oogling about it, but nobody really comes to any intelligent conclusions.
Well, there's obviously some alien or ET technology at work there, or it wouldn't even have to necessarily be ET. in nature. It could have been another society here on the planet. Obviously, we haven't learned the lesson about the errors inherent in war, perpetual wars, world wars, regional wars, these conflicts that erupt in places that make no sense whatsoever, other than that they can grow illegal drugs in that area, or that it's a good hideaway for stolen loot. You know, I'm just making a general comment here, not to take up all your time, but there always seems to be, you know, the way they present history to us, that man was primitive, and therefore, if man accomplished anything of any greatness, it had to have been accomplished through slavery. Let's get the slaves and let's build pyramids. Let's get the slaves and let's build a Parthenon or an amphitheater. The slaves can do anything, but they're primitive. That's why they're slaves. And we haven't seemed to have been able to extricate ourselves from this concept of slavery. But I propose that those buildings, those edifices that were constructed thousands and thousands of years ago, were actually, if not ET in origin, were just higher knowledge, the knowledge that's been suppressed and kept secret from us. And I see us moving into a time where all of that is going to be made available to us. It's going to be known or possibly remembered. You want to comment on that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you're going into territory that I'm real fond of and real familiar with. The thing that's interesting about that whole deal is that the concept of linear history is rubbish, and it's easily proven to be so. There are literally thousands of books written on the subject, which disclose the stupidity of a linear history, and yet the general consensus never changes. Why is that? It's because, despite the fact that some archaeologists and paleontologists and other professionals put their entire life and their career on the block when they do when they publish these types of information, it's never picked up and properly distributed by mainstream media, and so it's always left in the sort of fringe science area or the area of kooks. And for some reason, once it's put there, it doesn't matter what the credentials of the individuals are who are trying to promulgate this type of information. The fact of the matter is, it just doesn't get picked up by the general public. Or if they hear about it, they don't give a rip because the ball game is on. You know,
yes. So if it's not seen in Popular Mechanics or some other such publication, then it can't be believed. Are you suggesting, Jim, that possibly these civilizations came about as a result of maybe, I mean, this is just speculation here, but it's maybe very plausible, that you have two parallel timelines that sort of collapse on each other at a point in a parabola, let's say, in that timeline where two seemingly separate events seem to merge together and form a different reality? Is that a possibility, or are you saying that maybe one just replaces the other in a, you know, sort of like, okay, Team A, come over here to this room. Team B, you go over there for a certain period of time and then go back. Or is it something else?
Well, the way I interpret it is that when I say it's nonlinear, what I mean is that the linear progression of man
is
a farce.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it starts off with these ape-like creatures that don't know very much about anything, barely surviving, blah, blah, blah. And over so many hundreds of thousands of years of evolution, they start to discover science and technology and what have you, and bingo, we wind up where we are today. I think a much more realistic history that embraces the facts that are available to us seems to suggest that, first of all, this planet is extremely ancient. Second of all, man or man-type creatures have been here for a very, very long time. And third of all, and there's plenty of information to support this notion, there have been several, possibly five or six periods in the Earth's overall history over the millions of years that mankind has risen to a level at least comparable to where we are now, possibly greater than where we are now, and then through various mistakes, wars, cosmic influences, tragedies, cataclysms, or what have you, that's been destroyed and reduced down to a very primitive state again, and mankind had to climb back up from the abyss to a new plateau of achievement, and had to do that several times. So This explains why, if you look, you find such incredible things that don't belong in a linear past, but they're there anyway. And so instead of saying, well, gee, what else could explain this? What they do, generally speaking, is they have this big storage area someplace, possibly in the Smithsonian, possibly in the British Museum, who knows where it is, and anything that doesn't fit in the normal explanation of history is stored away, and only certain individuals are allowed to see it, know about it, and study it. And this is exactly the kind of thing that was hinted at by Steven Spielberg in the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, where the Ark was eventually taken into this huge warehouse with thousands of crates containing only God knows what. Things like that are very real. I mean, I've been involved with situations where artifacts have been found and deliberately tucked away so that nobody could examine them.
Yeah, they probably would have right in a studio lot, warehouse or something, you know, with the anticipated explanation that if anyone caught on to what was happening, they could always say, oh, that's just a prop that was made for the movie, you know. You know, I want to bring something up in respect to what you're talking about, because I heard an absolute lie yesterday, and this was through mainstream media. They were addressing the issue of the 1918 swine flu pandemic. Now, this was spawned in Spain, and they had vaccinated some military, American military personnel, who had then been sent to Spain where they spread the disease. Now, the official story that was brought out by this guy that wrote a book about the swine flu pandemic that we're currently facing made a misrepresentation so gross and said back in 1918 they didn't have a vaccine for the swine flu. Yet, even in 1918, what caused the epidemic, I should say, was the fact that they had transmitted it through the vaccine, which is the very same scenario here. And this guy had the audacity to outright lie about it. We know the history of this. We've studied the history of this, and we've been talking about this since the beginning of the year, at least, if not last year, when this whole idea surfaced. And so, not only do they hide the information, they outright lie about it, even after it's been brought out. Go ahead.
The mechanism that you're disclosing is really very interesting, because it's been used for thousands and thousands of years, and there was a spoof made on that very issue in a comedy movie, and I forget the name of it, but and it had something to do with men who cheat on their wives. And the interesting thing is that the one guy gave the advice to this fellow who was contemplating having an affair. He said, it doesn't matter what happens, just deny it. Just lie about it. And so to exemplify the practice of this this effect, what they did was they have a skit there where the guy is in bed with another woman, and the wife actually walks into the room, and she starts ranting and raving and screaming, and the guy gets dressed, the girl gets dressed, they make the bed together, they tidy up everything, he kisses the girl goodbye, she goes out the door, the guy sits down in his easy chair, turns on the lamp, lights his pipe, takes a book, has it in his lap, and the wife is still ranting and raving, and he keeps saying, what are you talking about? What woman? What woman? And you know, the whole point of it is that even though she saw it happen, his behavior and the fact that when she finally calmed down, there was nobody there, that she actually bought it. Now, even though that's ridiculous, that's exactly what they do. And we do buy it.
Yeah, the general public is the wife in that respect, and you know, in respect to the story that you just told. Well, but the audacity, you see, this is their way of countering. This is called COINTELPRO, by the way. This is the way they counter the truth coming out through the alternative media, the various books, reports, articles, studies. And the radio shows or the video documentaries that are being made through the alternative media totally blow that lie out of the water. But the average individual that is watching, Joe or Jane American that is highly influenced by what they hear on their local television channel, their alphabet agency sponsored channel, that puts out nothing but incessant propaganda, mind-controlling advertisements, and an occasional sporting event with more of the same tucked in inside the content, in between the timeouts and the penalties. it's a farce, but I mean, I have to tell you, I was absolutely incensed at the brazen manner in which an absolute lie was told that pandemic in 1918 was intentionally caused, just like this one is, you see. But they can go so far as to say there was no vaccine back in 1918. What a lie! What a lie! And this person gets on primetime TV. When are people going to wake up? When are people going to finally put their foot down and really say what they mean, and mean what they say?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is just if they don't even have to have a developed consciousness to see through that. All you need is common sense. If Joe Blow, who has a shoe repair shop down on the corner, wanted to get on primetime TV to voice his opinion about the longevity of shoes or the discomfort of shoes or the effect of shoes on the skeletal structure of man or anything worthwhile having to do with his trade, he'd never make it. He would just never be allowed to do that.
Yes.
You would have to go through some exceptional gymnastics to get yourself put on primetime TV to make some sort of an announcement having to do with something worthwhile. So
yeah.
How is it that this yo-yo winds up not only on primetime, but discussing an issue of this sensitivity? Well, obviously, somebody put him there, and whoever it was had the power to pull the right strings, pay the right bills, and dredge this guy out of the woodwork for that purpose. That alone should tell you that it's probably hogwash.
Well, yes, I meant to use that term before in talking about that swine flu hoax. It's hogwash. That's the nice term for it. So, yeah, you know, when here's the thing, too, what you said about returning back to that state prior to accomplishing a certain or reaching a certain level of consciousness accompanied by the associated knowledge. Once you have that knowledge, there's nothing that they can say that undoes that. Now, does one harbor within themselves, in their mind or their heart, the knowledge of that issue only to confront it with another lie, another illusion, another misrepresentation of the truth? Am I supposed to entertain both of those? That results in pure insanity.
But the interesting thing about it is, once you start to develop this consciousness that we're talking about, then you become more and more aware that you have a truth meter built into you also. And you begin to gauge things by this sense of whether something is real or not, or true or not. And so once you reach a certain point, you can almost determine just by the way something is presented to you whether it's real or not,
mm-hmm.
at least in part. And then you don't have to just swallow it whole. You're perfectly allowed to investigate what you're being told and to make your own decisions.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the gift of free will and a clear and sound mind, is that you make your own decision about what you're going to accept into your reality and what you're going to reject.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's all brainwashing.
Well, I have to tell you, referring back to the topic that I brought up at the top of the show and my experience in delving into this community integrity issue, it was at the point that everyone sort of willingly and unpredictably entered a state of being totally in the heart that process occurred. In other words, what I'm saying is, the moment everyone was operating purely from the heart center, there was total agreement on a mental level. It was very interesting, and it's left everyone with an anticipation of what is to come. Well, through that mutual cooperation.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I mean, that's how we should relate to every other human being, and
mm-hmm.
and to our existence in general. But of course, we're not allowed to do that yet.
Yes, I wasn't even aware that anyone of the stature of the long-legged Mac Daddy was actually in the running for a Nobel Pizza Prize. And I think everyone else that I know who brought it up to me was equally shocked. I wasn't even aware that they were voting. Shame on me for not paying attention to mainstream media. But I mean, if this isn't the farce of all farces, I don't know what is. I've questioned some selections in the past. This is one for the record books, I think.
Think there's a secondary motive in that also, because let's look at the possible things that can happen here. This guy has been involved with every shameful act imaginable since he's been in office, and of course he's in cahoots with all of the other Morphidites that had that position before him, who are still surviving, and they're all guilty of similar things. Now, let's just assume that conditions are such that a lot of this is about to come to light. Well, this could very well be a very carefully planned operation to instill a very saint-like aura around this guy, so that it might afford him a small blanket of protection in the event that some of the other things he's involved with begin to surface. because people are going to say, oh, they never would have awarded that to him if these other things were true. It just can't be.
Mm-hmm.
That's human nature. But, you know, I didn't hear any, you know, normally the way that's handled is that you have certain selections which are talked about ahead of time for the various contributions that they've made. You don't just all of a sudden say, well, you know what, this year it goes to such and such. You know, they actually are supposed to deliberate on it and debate about it, and the people that are in the running are generally publicized.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the whole thing smells like a kettle of rotten fish.
Oh, yeah. You know, you wonder now, I don't know what they call the Nobel Committee, maybe that's what they call it, but this had sort of the aroma of the Bilderberg Group and the UN kind of rolled into one. And the way the EU just praised lavish approval on him, and on this whole process, really with, you know, without the, what we call the foreplay, the media foreplay, you know, the hype and the buildup of this whole story, the anticipation of, is the long-legged Mac Daddy gonna win the Nobel Pizza Prize? You know, I guess my question is, where is the pizza?
Well, I got an even more interesting question. We already know that the EU is in cahoots with the same trash that's running this country. So that doesn't surprise me that we get applause from that direction. What do we hear from China and Russia on this subject?
I haven't gone into it enough. You know, I'm responding to the few emails that I got and the few references as I'm moving from point A to point B and possibly picking up some audio on the topic. I do know that their concerns are more centered on the money that they are owed for the trash derivatives and hedge funds they invested in and the non-payment of loans. And so their interest there, you know, they know this is a farce. Come on. Where is the peace? Where is this peace that has occurred that he has won this prize for? He has done nothing but create dissent, anger, mistrust, and outright fraud perpetrated on the American people and on the rest of the world. And they give this this type of behavior a prize? You know, what are we dealing with here? They've all gone off their rocker. I don't know how else to describe it.
It's a planned situation.
And which
of the two is the easier explanation?
Well, I think it's both, actually. I think it's planned, and I think it's just business as usual. You know, he needs a little chump change, you know, in his piggy bank, you know, to do his worldly travels. He blew that much money going to Denmark. You know, this is a way of getting a refund on our expenditure. And who do you think pays for this Nobel Prize? Do you think it comes out of their foundation? I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. I really do. It's like everything else. The money's taken from us, and in some way, if we haven't already paid into it via one of these bailout issues, they've snuck a tax in somewhere else on a pack of chewing gum or a candy bar. Someone will pay for this.
Well, that's true.
You know, is it really important? The bottom line is they have to aggrandize their messiah again. Evidently, the olive wreath has lost all of its thorns, and they have to give him a new one. So I don't know how else to describe it. Jim, we're at that closing moment of the show. Did you have the opportunity to say everything you wanted to say tonight? And if not, Or if so, do you have a closing comment you'd like to make, or should we try to squeeze a couple more minutes out of Seth here?
Well, we can do both if you can arrange it, because actually I only touched on two of at least 25 issues that I wanted to relate. I can cover a couple of more and then give you the promise that we can continue on this subject next week if you like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I want to give you the feeling that you covered enough that we don't sound like we're griping about this, you know, these seemingly trivial issues, you know. So,
I guess we're allowed to do both. The next part that I wanted to mention, which is in keeping with the thrust of this whole presentation, was there are these amazing things referred to as misplaced artifacts, and they're quite prevalent actually, and there's a growing collection of them in various places around the world. Some are openly displayed, most of them are suppressed, but basically what they are objects which we find in places where you would never expect to find such things, and which are suggestive of the fact that something is wrong with our idea of history. A good example of that is a tungsten sphere, almost perfect in its geometry, with a groove machined around its equator or around its rim, was discovered in a chunk of coal that was at a level in the earth that would correspond to something like, you know, 10 million years ago or whatever. And there's no normal explanation that could ever explain how that device, whatever it may have been, was there. And yet,
now, how was that device discovered? I'm sorry, how was that device discovered?
In a normal coal mining operation, you know, they blasted through a seam and these chunks of coal came out, and as they were loading them into the wagon or whatever, the coal train, somebody noticed a shiny thing sticking out of one of these chunks of coal, and they took a small hammer and broke it away, and there inside was this incredible sphere. And it was analyzed, you know, and it was turned out to be tungsten, and it was measured and the measurements were almost absolutely perfect. And so, you know, what is it doing there? If that coal seam is truly that old, then somebody was on the planet when that coal was a bunch of slime at the bottom of a swamp or a lake someplace, and that device was dropped into the water that long ago. Otherwise,
wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah,
I was going to say, wouldn't that be interesting if that was just a baby rattle of the time, you know?
Well, it's one heck of a big baby, but nothing's impossible.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one thing. The other thing is that tooling has been found in similar situations, in peat bogs and in coal mines and in inside marble in the bottom of quarries. And, you know, they have to be at the least, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years old, because marble is metamorphic limestone. So, you know, it had to have been inserted at a time even before the limestone had congealed, which means that it would have been in a layer of sediment, you know, way back in time before it became rock. And there's a lot of these types of things. So I'm not trying to solve these mysteries, and I'm not even trying to suggest that there's no other explanation. But the point of the fact is that they're definitely there. They definitely have been, you know, discovered and analyzed. And the point is that it indicates something is not right with the way we interpret our history. And that's what's worth thinking about. And we have time to do one more?
Yeah, sure. I just want to make a comment that it's not so much the interpretation of the history as there is the obfuscation of it. The intentional
well, sure, you know, the rightful way of approaching this would be that it's publicized everywhere, everybody gets excited about it, and then what would happen would be there would be a normal cross-pollinization between minds, and somebody would say, well, I know of a similar situation that happened in Pennsylvania or South America or, you know, or wherever. And before you know it, they would start investigating into this stuff, and you'd get a general consensus of the fact that, hey, there's too much of this stuff floating around for it to just be a singular event or an anomaly of nature. It has to be representative of the fact that there was a technology here when the Earth was younger that we don't understand. And these are the remnants of it. But, of course, we don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Now, I want to allow you in the closing moment here to go into your final topic, and certainly we will pick this up again next week before we say goodnight to the audience, okay?
Yeah, I'll do one more, and it'll be quick.
Okay.
Back in the 1890s, they discovered four sarcophagi in the Abruzzi region of Italy, in some kind of a cave, and they contained perfect human skeletons 12 feet high and all in proper proportion. This made all kinds of commotion for a very short period of time, and of course the bones were taken away, never seen again, but there were articles that survived about it, there are photographs that survived about it. And the interesting thing is, you know, we have lots of literature that suggests that there was a time when giants walked the earth. It's even mentioned in the Bible for those people who enjoy the Bible. So the point is, here's another mystery that you'd think would be looked into with great interest and concern, and it's wiped from the slates of the general consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things like this we can talk about. If you think that it's an interesting subject area, believe me, I know so many anecdotes about these things that it would probably amaze you.
Well, I have a particular interest in, and I know many others have a particular interest in hidden artifacts. And what brought that about? Was it a question of protecting them from potential misuse? We could talk about Tesla's inventions in that respect, but older technologies that have been secreted from the mass consciousness, even from the scientific community, and just applied in minuscule, crystals being one such topic, and all the various uses of crystals. When applied to frequency, for instance. That's just one example that I would use. We've talked about the crystal skulls on some past shows, and of course, that's just one particular kind of artifact. Think of all the different musical instruments or the devices that were made to cause or to affect healing. So, you know, if you'd like to talk about those things and more, I'm kind of pushing you, urging you to cover that area a little bit. I think it would be very interesting for a lot of folks.
Sure. As a matter of fact, I actually had that on the list because...
It's on the list, okay. Well,
yeah, one of the things that I wanted to mention was the fact that brain surgery and other forms of pretty advanced medicine were practiced in a number of areas in very ancient times, and we have a lot of proof of that.
Yes. Well, as I often say, you know, with all the advanced technology we have, we seem to forget some of the simplest logic. If they are in genuinely engaged in a search for extraterrestrial intelligence or any kind of intelligence, one should begin here, right here on planet Earth. That would be a good starting point. Let's find intelligence here, and then let's move out from that point.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You agree.
I agree
okay.
with you because, frankly, if we look at the animal kingdom itself in the proper way, you'll be amazed at the amount of intelligence that's manifest. It's just our arrogance that prevents us from seeing it.
Yeah. Well, Jim, it's been a great show. You know, I like to go on for hours, but we have to allow folks to get some sleep, including our engineer, Seth. So I'm going to say goodnight to you and wish you a great weekend. I look forward to our chat next week, same time, same place, here on bbsradio.com, and have a great weekend.
Well, thank you very much, and I wish the same for you, Don.
Okay. Folks, you have been listening to Evidence Footprints on bbsradio.com, on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and on blogtalkradio.com. Special thanks to all you out there in the military who have tuned in, all of you who are putting your lives on the line for a worthy cause. Let's hope it's the best one that you can possibly make and our leaders can possibly make. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evidence Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again next week for another great series of shows. In the meantime, I wish everyone a great weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.